Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is March 27th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. It is Baseball Eve with the opening day arriving tomorrow. We don't have any games today, but we have all of them tomorrow. I cannot wait. For those that are wondering kind of, hey, what happens now with PitcherList? What goes on? All the drafts are done. What do you guys do? Oh, man. We are the site that has the most comprehensive daily updates of any site out there. You have my SP Roundup as well as my First Pitch Podcast, Plus Pitch Podcast that you're listening to now, and my daily streaming rankings on the site. You also get the First Pitch Podcast that reviews all the performances that you need to know, plus any news every single morning. That is Casey Bubba and Jake Crumpler. You have our reliever ranks. That is going over every single day the guys who came in relief last night, the closing charts for every team. It's so good at keeping tabs on saves and vultured wins. There is no better place to figure out who you should be having on your roster for relievers on a given day and who actually might get the playing time that day. We have our batter's box, which is our hitting performances from last night as well. So all you need to do is just go to PitcherList in the morning, read our daily columns that keep you up to date on everything that you need to know. And of course, we also have, I have to mention, our routine podcast that we have across our network. We have our newsletter from Daniel Port and company, who do a great job just keeping you updated on any of the major articles that comes out. I do my list on Mondays, the top 100. We have closers on Tuesdays, hitter list on Wednesdays, save and holds on Thursdays, and all relievers on Fridays. Sit and start through the week, two start pitchers. I am actually also starting a brand new podcast on Fridays that is called the SB Fab Forecast. SB Fab Forecast. I don't know how no one has come up with the Fab Four before. Beatles, love them. That is just for PL Pro members. And that is going to be a personal podcast that's going to be about 20, 30 minutes, quickly going over all of the potential fab gets for Sunday for pitchers, talking about two-star pitchers, talking about guys that might be coming up or should be rostered for a stream, and what I would be bidding on them in about five or six different tiers of bidding value. So that's just for PL Pro members. I wanted to give something extra because I feel like in season, I want to do more for people that support us, and that's a nice bonus that I can do. It's tough for me to take more time to do stuff like that, but I figure as a podcast, that makes sense. So definitely go sign for PL Pro if you haven't done that yet. But we have so much coverage, and most importantly, maybe, I'm live streaming all day on Thursday, 1 p.m. through midnight. I will be here. I might take a small break between the afternoon games and 7:30, okay, because it might end. I might get like 30 minutes or 1 hour just to kind of take a breather. But I will be having guests through the day. We'll be going through all the different games on playback.tv. I cannot wait for this. Baseball is back and PitcherList is here to enjoy it with you. So let's talk about everything that happened yesterday. Of course, Jordan Montgomery signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks on a 1-year, $25 million deal. It can be a 2-year deal. It is an opt-out for Montgomery if he makes at least 10 starts this year. And then he has a guaranteed deal of either 20, 22.5, or $25 million, depending on how many starts he hits this year. That is a 10, 18, and 23. So 10 starts, he gets 20, and 23, he gets 25. We'll see. Watch them just use an opener now. That would be hilarious. Now, Shane Baz has officially been moved to the IL by the Tampa Bay Rays. Why does that matter? Because if you drafted Shane Baz, he's not a stash play anymore. He's now an IL play. And that's a huge difference because one takes a roster spot and the other doesn't. So if you have open IL spots to kick off the season and Baz is on your waiver wire, you definitely should pick him up because it should be about a month or so. And if you recall, my ranking of Shane Baz before we got word that he wasn't going to start the season with the Rays and was going to be limited early was around 40. So understand that Shane Baz is super legit. Fantastic four-seamer, fantastic slider. He has amazing stuff and better than average command. I love it. I am excited for it. He might be limited out of the gate when he does return from the IL. But when it comes to be June 15th, everyone is going to be super happy they have Shane Baz on their team. And last but not least, Tommy Henry is starting the third game of the season for the Diamondbacks, not the fifth. Why does that matter? Because Ryan Nelson was originally slated to get Rocky Road, which I don't know how good it was, but it was obviously better than facing the Yankees, who he'll face now. So if you were thinking about going after Ryan Nelson, well, it's the Yankees and Atlanta the first two starts. I think you should probably just wait on that one. There was one other shift in the rotation that I do want to mention. And that, of course, is, well, not just Tristan McKenzie, who was going against the Oakland Athletics before, but now it's the Mariners, and that's fine. It's Mackenzie Gore, who we'll talk about right now, actually. I'm going to skip ahead. He went 4 innings, 0 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 7 Ks against the minor league national squad. So not a good lineup, right? And he should do this against them. But now that he's going as SP4, he's going to miss his first outing, which was in Cincinnati, and instead get the Pirates of the fourth game of the year for the Nationals. Oh, I'm so in for that. Then he gets the Phillies, which I was obviously worried about before, but you start him for the Pirates. You see how that goes. If it goes well, you hold on to him for the next weekend. That is the Phillies, right? It's going to be a Monday-Sunday game, essentially, for Mackenzie Gore. And if that goes well, then he gets the Athletics. After that, it's terrible. It's like really, really bad. Like he has to go to Fenway, he has to deal with Atlanta, he has to deal with, maybe it's not the Dodgers, but I think it's the Phillies again. It's a really, really bad schedule after that Athletics game for Gore. But 2 out of 3 out of the gate for a guy that has looked good in the spring and is finally showcasing some sort of ceiling that we thought before. And if you say, well, the Nationals don't win games, well, neither do the Pirates and the Athletics. So someone's got to get a win. Maybe it's going to be Mackenzie Gore. He is now, because of this rotation change, moving up on the list today, which sounds crazy that, like, Nick, how could you do this on Wednesday? Because it's literally the first start of the year. It means so much to everyone after pick around 50 or 55 on the list. So Mackenzie Gore, I've got my eye on you now for that first start because you're looking good. High four seamers, 95, 97. He struck out 7 batters in this one and used 4 pitches, 4 different ones to get strikeouts. Curve got a strikeout, slider did, changeup, four-seamer. That's a cool thing to see. Kyle Gibson looked great. 5 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 9 strikeouts. Slider to right-handers is what got a lot of these guys. And that is not really something that you should bank on constantly because not against left-handers, it's his changeup, which isn't as good. Not to mention, executing that slider as well as he did in this one is not something we normally see. And getting to 2 strikes in the first place is often the struggle for Gibson, as that slider is not a strike pitch. It's just a put-away pitch. So don't really lean too much into this one in spring training. And on the other side of it, it was Shota Imanaga, 3 innings, 3 earned runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. It is kind of interesting to see him go 9 base runners in 3 innings. That's a 3 whip of obviously quick maths there. I wonder if that's going to be an issue for him. I don't have all the data. Obviously, we you know, when we get into season, we can do the fun stuff like ICR, and we can do the strike minus ICR and get better PLV numbers and so on and so forth. And I'm curious if Shota has a higher ICR than I want him to have. The big question to me is, you're pitching the MPB, which is more contact focused. We know this. And it induces, well, it encourages pitchers to pitch more to contact because of this. We've really used the edges right, and it's okay to throw more stuff in the zone, all that kind of stuff. I wonder if Shota is going to be slowly transitioning away from that kind of approach, as 8 hits is 8 hits, and his stuff doesn't work as well in the zone as it did in Japan. However, his stuff is great. I didn't see a strikeout here on a swing and miss up in the zone on a fastball, though. A taken fastball, but it was mostly on the breaker or the split. So I want to see that from Imanaga. I also want to get confirmation that he does have elite both IVB and HAVAA. If he has those two things, oh dang. If he has also extension, that's good too. I mean, I want to see all of that, and I'm really looking forward to it. We'll get that on the first start over this weekend. So stuff like that. Actually, we'll probably get it on Monday or Tuesday because Come to think of it, if you started on Tuesday, you're not starting this weekend. I mean, theoretically, you could start on Sunday if the team wants, but generally it means you are the fourth starter. So Shota not going this opening weekend is a little annoying, if you ask me. I guess that would be then Kyle Hendricks being the SP3. Justin Steele. I actually have this now, if you guys can hear it. Maybe you can. I don't know. Probably not. I have a soundboard now. I'll make sure that for these podcasts, I can have the soundboard included. But for Shota, he's getting the home opener, I'm seeing from chat. He's starting on Monday. So Hendricks would be the third. Steele would be the second. Sorry, the first. And the second would be, I know the Cubs rotation. It's not Jameson Taillon. It's that other guy. You know, that guy that I'm totally blanking on. Not Jordan Wicks. I can't remember him for some reason. But that is the number two for the Cubs. They'll come back to me in the next one, I'm sure. Moving on to other guys that we're going to talk about. We actually have not too many games, but we have a good amount. A lot of StatCast stuff. And we're going to get to all of that after this break. So the Cubs rotation, yeah, it's Steele, Hendricks, and Wicks. And that's against the Rangers now. So Wicks was kind of interesting for the Rocky Road thing, but no. Don't want to touch that whatsoever now because he's getting the Rangers. No way. And Shota is going to get the Rockies in Wrigley, which is good, but they haven't seen Coors yet, so it's not as good, but that still should be a start you should be looking forward to. The Astros also have one of those, hey, it's us versus our minor leaguers. And Franz actually pitched against the tougher opponent, which makes sense, I guess. 4 innings, 3 in runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 1 K representing the minor league team. It was fewer cutters. We saw like closer to 40% last time. Now it's 21%, but still only about a third fastballs. And that's fine. Just a little bit more in the heart of the zone than he wants. Not really great to see the command not perfect right now as he goes into the regular season against the Yankees. We're not going to start him for that. And we're going to be very tepid early on with France until we see something really shift in the right direction. Renel Blanc on the other side looks like he was shifting in the right direction. 4.1 innings of 1 earned run, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts. My gosh. However, against the Astros minors, not a major league lineup here. And the slider and curve, that's great. 11 for 31 whiffs, but it was not really a well-commanded game. He had some good moments with these things, but a lot of it was a little bit wild. He was 1-2 ticks down in the fastball. We are not trusting Blanco early in the year. Dane Dunning, 3.1 innings of 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. A 70% sinker and slider, and honestly, I don't like that version of Dane Dunning much. I need him to throw more cutters and sliders, throw more whiffs. He didn't really do that here. Does not look like something I want to chase. Aaron Ashby pitched 5.1 innings of 4 earned runs, 10 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. It's the first time we've got data on him since he pitched in 2022, as he missed all of last year with shoulder surgery. Now he's 2 ticks down to just 93 on the heater. And he does not have command, and that was really a big thing that I wasn't focused on enough for Aaron Ashby, was command was ugh, before. And I was really hoping that just the velocity, the hard to hit, sinker was okay. He didn't really have command, just throwing the zone at that velocity, and that's fine. As long as he had strikes on his slider and change, everything was good. But that got worse in 2022 and then from 2021, and now we're really just not seeing that. So I'm very, very slow on, I'm bearish on Ashby, and I think we need to sell a lot in the minors for us to get back into this. I've also always said that Ashby really needs to be throwing more of a four-seamer to righties, because against righties, the sinker just does not do the same things as it does to lefties. Ryan Feltner, 4 innings, 0 in runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. I've joked a little that the Rockies starters, that is Freeland and Feltner, might be interesting options out of the gate. He might be in Wrigley for his first start of the year. It looks like that he's as this before. And he has a flat four-seamer, that 95-96 that could work. Thing is, his slider is not a strike pitch. Or sorry, not a whiff pitch. It's a strike pitch. It's more like a cutter. He hasn't really had that year of four-seamer dominance yet for Feltner. It did look good in this one. But that's about it. And he doesn't really have a secondary whiff pitch. So it's not that great. I feel like if Feltner was on another squad, we would get more interested, because I think that he would push to find a slider that's more like a slider than a cutter. But yeah, I can't do this. It's interesting. It's for deep NL only. You might want to consider that Feltner starting regularly, but I'm not going to do it. Casey Lawrence is being mentioned here for the Mariners just because he is the SP6 now, with Hancock as SP5 as Wu is on the mend. Not for very long, but Lawrence is that backup option for them. And he's like a Ryan Yarbrough type of sub 90 with cutters and changeups mostly. And then you have some sinkers. Oh boy. 5 innings, 200 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, 2 Ks. Yes, I'm so happy for you in spring against the Padres, but no, we're not going to do this. Michael King on the other side, 4.2 innings of 300 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. It's the neckbeard approach, and I really dig this because you can also get whiffs. That's why 7 Ks and 4.2 innings for King. 300 runs, annoying, but 5 base runners in about 5 innings. Like, I think Michael King is really good and primed for a fantastic season. He has elite command. He's a number one on that tier of 1 to 5, which is pretty dang impressive for such a young kid. He actually isn't as young as others, but still, for as less seasoned, Michael King is a command specialist, and it's amazing to see with that ridiculously filthy slider. So I'm a fan. We just talk about Michael. Everybody wants to be like Mike. Paul Blackburn, oh, he certainly does. 5.2 innings of 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 0 walks, and 6 strikeouts. It's nice to see him go 30% cutters because his four-seamer isn't very good. It's 92-93, which is a little bit higher than last year. It was like 91-92, but that's just... All this is not enough to justify rostering Blackburn. I'm happy he got 6 Ks, but we need something really more, especially on the Athletics. Spencer Howard went 1.2 innings in a bullpen game for the Giants. 0 earned runs, 1 hit, 0 walks, and 2 Ks. He's a depth piece in case they need something, but he doesn't have the repertoire that's worth chasing. I'm still looking for like a whiff on a slider or changeup. Like, I've never really seen it. When he showed up, it was just really 4-seamers all the time and nothing else. And, like, he's just never been able to develop a really good secondary. It's kind of wild to me. Crazy. We don't care about Spencer Howard and 2 first names. Of course not. Last two here. Well, that's actually more than two. for the StatCast games that were on TV, last two. James Paxton versus Chase Silseth. A very interesting one because... I've been out on Silseth and intrigued by Paxton because he's starting for the Dodgers out of the gate. And to start for the Dodgers in a situation where you don't have a leash is a really good thing. And James Paxton has showed that he can go a strikeout per inning, and for a winning ball club, like, that is absurd value, right? Well, maybe, but maybe not. 5 innings, 300 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 2 Ks. This was the first game I think I have like legitimate data for Paxton. I think maybe I saw 1 inning before and I didn't really know what to make of that. But now that we have like, okay, this is a game. Hi, I'm here. And he was sitting 95 last year. It was 96 and then it decreased as it went on through the year. But we can say 95 on average. This one was 93, where he topped out at 94.8. Not great. Not what you want from James Paxton. Could be saving some bullets. It could be just who he is now, but he did have good command. He did locate upstairs with that four-seamer. He did have a really good knuckle curve. This was a 44% CSW pitch, and that's a huge deal for Paxton, as last year, many games, it was just fastballs at 60% usage and really just bullying their way to the finish line, while the curve and the cutter really lacked. The cutter was good in this one. He got a strikeout on it. He was able to throw a couple good ones. But really, this was the curveball game. And that's great. And I actually do wonder, okay, if this is your command, if this is like what we get, is this good enough against the Giants? Probably. You're going against the SP5 for the Giants, who I don't think is going to be Snell. It could be. But I think it's going to be maybe Keaton Wynn. It could just be one like bullpen game. Still could be like Spencer Howard and friends. And I would think that Paxton could get a win here. He would go 5 innings in that game at least. That still seems valuable. So I'm still considering Paxton in my team, in my drafts, and to pick up off the wire if he's there in your 12 teamers, just for that start next week. You don't really need to do it now because he's not going to go this weekend. It's 4 games for the Dodgers. Not Paxton involved there. He's SP5 with Stone going before him. So keep that in mind, but Paxton is still intriguing enough for me to start him against the Giants. Now, Chase Silseth, this is going to be a weird one. He's going to make the list today because he went 5 innings, 200 runs, 2 hits, 0 walks, and 10 strikeouts against the pretty normal Dodgers squad, right? He faced like a normal team here. They did pull a little bit, but like this is the Dodgers, right? He struck out Ohtani. So how did he do this? Well, first of all, his four-seamer, which is not a good pitch. This is by far the most detrimental part of Chase Silseth. Yes, it comes in at like 95, sometimes 96, but it is a dead zone fastball. It does not have any extension that you like, any VAA that you like. it's not good. It's going to be like a 45% ICR pitch again. ICR being ideal contact rate. Essentially for fastballs, you want to be under 40%. And how often when you throw this, is it allowing contact that is good for the batter? That is ideal contact rate. Okay. Combines barrels and hard hits and stuff like that. It's the best one you should use. So don't use like batting average allowed or WOBA and stuff. Just use ICR because that's what you're trying to, that's the conversation you're trying to have, right? And yes, Silseth got away with his four seamer in this because he had 11 foul balls and just one in play. And when I see a high foul to ball in play percentage, you have to ask yourself, does this pitch usually induce whiffs or does this pitch usually induce balls in play? Because after all the years that I've been up at night thinking about foul balls with Alex Chamberlain and Alex Fast, this is the conclusion that I've reached about how to analyze foul balls. And it's that it takes away from the primary outcome on a swing. So when a batter swings, is this a pitch that has an above average swing strike rate or an above average ball in play? And foul balls remove from the more likely outcome. So when you see an extreme amount of foul balls, it removes from, in Silseth's situation, balls in play, which also in Silseth's situation is bad for him. So when he doesn't allow those, it means that he gets more strikes, which then puts him in a situation to take advantage of his best assets, which are Silseth's slider and his splitter. And that's why you see 10 strikeouts here. That is the best explanation I can give for you on how he can get to 10 strikeouts against this good lineup. I do want to mention the slider is more sweepy than your traditional like gyro. It's like too plain, really. And it can be very good. It's all-purpose pitch, but sometimes it is very, very, very hittable. He actually had an 11% mistake rate last year. And mistake rate is a pitch inside of the zone that we believe has a double the chance of allowing a hit, which is not good. And for sliders, seeing 11% mistake rate is really high, but he throws it more in the zone than others, which makes sense, right? A lot of guys have a really low mistake rate on their sliders because they just don't throw it in the zone, which means, yeah, you're not going to have a double the chance to allow a hit, but it's going to be a ball a lot, right? So mistake rate is a good thing to match with like strike rate. Are you throwing a lot of strikes and is it mistakes a lot? We do it with ICR as well. That's striker, which is strike minus ICR, right? Anyway, so Silseth is a splitter guy too. Good location on those for the most part. PLV didn't really love his splitter last year because he threw a little bit too many of them over the plate. Also, not the greatest movement of all splitters. That said, he located it well on this one. So if Silseth has three things going in his given night, right? One, foul balls on his four-seamer and not allowing them in play. So low ball and play percentage, which actually we're going to have on our player pages later this year, which I'm really excited about. A ball and play percentage is something we have never talked about enough, and I think it's a very important thing. Two, is he getting his sliders and splitters down and executing them with two strikes? And three, is he not allowing mistakes on that slider? So he did all those things. There you go. He deserves to be on the list because maybe that is something that sticks. Maybe I'm also, being reductive about Silseth, and maybe he's able to actually do this kind of command constantly. I don't know. But that's, to me, how the whole thing works well, and it just feels like it's not, I don't know, consistent in my view. And it's also the Angels, and I don't like the Angels. Okay, other games here. Casey Mize went against Ryan Pepiot, and we saw everything we want to see with Casey Mize. Four-seamers upstairs, precise location upstairs. Sliders that were in the zone, not ideal sliders. Like, they were a little bit too hittable at times, but he got tons of strikes with them. I want to say it was 17 over 21. Which is ridiculous. That's like, well, like an 80% strike rate. If I do quick maths in my head, maybe 75%. I mean, that's crazy good. I think it's 80%. You have splitters and also curveballs underneath that got whiffs. Like, this was great. And this is the Casey Mize that I've been thinking of seeing. Like, this is what I expect from Mize. And maybe that slider even gets better because it used to be a much better one. I think so. I'm excited for Casey Mize. Get him in every league. Seriously, just do it. It's not like he's not going to be like a top 15 guy. Maybe he is, but no, probably not. But he's like, he's one of your hollies. Like your, hey, six innings, I'm going to have a strikeout rate that's above 20%, 23% to 25%. I'm not going to kill you in ratios. Going to have a fair number of wins and stuff like that. Like, that is your guy you're going to pick up now. And I honestly, you might not just drop the entire year. Him and Flaherty are the two of those guys. I like Mize more than Flaherty. You have Ryan Pepiot, 6 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. He's doing 2 things here that really get me excited. One, it's still there. 4-seamers are still upstairs, and that's great. I saw something that said that his VAA dropped this spring. Why? Because, what do you know, throwing the ball upstairs means you have better VAA, right? It's not HAVAA. He still has the same flat ability, but because it's going upstairs, that changes the angle. That's why I use HAVAA, because that's the average of, if he always throws it in the middle, what kind of angle is it? And then we can say, cool, this works low or this works up. If you throw up, you're naturally going to be flatter because it's closer to where your arm is at the release, because you are releasing the ball from above the strike zone. Make sense? Cool. Awesome. Ryan Pepiot. That's dope. What's also dope is the Rays let him go 88 pitches. What? We're used to the Rays babying these young arms. That's not what they're doing for Pepiot. That's so cool. Let Pepiot start that much. That's awesome. Now, he did have 11 whiffs on a slider and changeup combined. He's not getting them down, though. And I do worry a little bit about that. Like, I'm happy that he got those whiffs, but the Pepiot changeup is still filthy. So, like, it's not as important for him to go under the zone, and he'll have more success in the zone with that changeup than other changeups. But the slider needs to be more of that, hey, cool, I'm just going to chill out of the zone a little bit more. And I don't really trust it as much as just like, hey, cool, here it is, as, say, like Casey Mize's. But maybe I should. I'm so conflicted on Pepiot because, like, the first two starts are just bad. They're just not good matchups. It's Toronto, it is Coors. I don't want to do that. But I do see this working. And they let him throw 88 pitches. I don't know. Maybe it's just one of those that's like, I just do it and I'm in for the ride and I'm just going to try. I mean, for 15 teamers, it's different. Like, you can't play that game. 12 teamers, you can. So we'll see. I'm excited to have him high on the list and like in May 1st or something. Just a couple more here. We have Jake Odorizzi, 3 innings, 200 runs. He's going to make it to the rotation. That's what the Rays want. He's the replacement relief for Taj Bradley and Shane Baz. It is Tyler Alexander right now, but Odorizzi should get there. And look, he commanded well. His 4-seamers upstairs, splitters down. Cutters were up there too. That works. If he has that command, he should be fine. He is slower on his velocity. And I don't know how much we can bank on this command, but like this generally works. I'm curious if he can pull that off when he does enter the rotation. He's limited right now. They might wait one pass with Tyler Alexander before Odorizzi shows up. Charlie Morton, 3 innings of 0 runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 4 Ks. He's 1-2 ticks down the heater, and that's stupid. So, no, at least the curveball is reliable, but you know, I don't really want to do this. And it's just, you're chasing wins, and I just don't like it. We have Louis Varland, 5 innings, 6 runs, 7 hits, 0 walks, and 5 strikeouts. The line isn't very good, but the main 2 skills that Varland has, which I love, is his high 4-seamer at 95+ with good shape, and he has a cutter he throws for strikes, and he kept that down. And those 2 pitches made up 70% of his pitches, allowed 2 hits. One was just a bad fastball down the middle. One was a cutter that was kind of early, and they jumped on it fine. But otherwise, those 2 pitches were great. 10 over 38 whiffs on the 4-seamer. And the other pitches were what messed them up a bit. And also the fact that he faced Atlanta. But the sinker and the change were not very good at all. And the slider was very inconsistent. Like, he's got to be better with that slider. So I like Varland still. And I think that a lot of people are going to be turned away because of that line against a very good team. But Louis Varland is still a very, very good pitcher, guys. And he's going to get a matchup early. Of going into Milwaukee and then the Dodgers. So I understand if you want to be hesitant. I'm going to be going Pepiot over Varland for the season because both of them have bad matchups early. So might as well go with Pepiot. But I still like Varland, and I think that he does turn into your Bailey Ober for this season. We have Tristan McKenzie and Brandon Faught. Tristan McKenzie, 200 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 7 Ks across 6 innings. 4-seamers are up. Curveballs are down. That's great. And the slider went 3 for 11 strikes, which is terrible. So, but we love Tristan McKenzie. Good matchup early on. It's not Oakland anymore. It's Seattle's. He's going the 5th start of the year for the Guardians, but that's cool with me. We love Tristan McKenzie. Velocity's a little bit down. We're not worried. Brandon Faught, 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 4 Ks. I'm worried that he's not throwing his 4-seamer high enough. I'm not seeing enough from the changeup. It was actually well commanded, this one. And the sweeper's always going to be good, but it was a 40 to 45% ICR in the 4-seamer last year. Sub 10% swing strike rate. I don't see that changing because he's not going high enough with it. And it's exactly what he did last year. I know he had a good playoff run. Maybe if he has pristine command with that changeup still and sweeper, then that's good enough. But it just seems too precarious to me and not elite enough for me to run with it. All right, that is it for today. Enjoy opening day tomorrow with me tomorrow, 1 p.m. Also, I'm going to be putting out a late edition of the list today. It is not going to be many changes from last week, but just the last lock it in stuff to make sure I feel good about Mize and Flaherty and Heal and a couple of the other news that we have. Going to be moving at Mackenzie Gore a bit because of that early schedule change, stuff like that. But that is it for today. So let's enjoy the season together. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.